Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Okay, picture this. A newborn, just tiny, having come through this incredibly complex life-saving heart surgery. Their recovery is obviously critical, but what if, right then, we could predict, like, with really startling accuracy, their specific risk for serious problems, things like cardiac arrest or needing a ventilator for a long time? What if looking into their own genetic code could give doctors a kind of personalized forecast, letting them step in before anything bad happens? It almost sounds like science fiction, doesn't it? And it's not anymore. It's really becoming a reality.
Yeah, exactly. And this isn't just about, you know, understanding the disease in general. It's really about looking into that individual's unique genetic blueprint to predict their specific path through it all, especially after a huge event like major heart surgery. It's genuinely about giving clinicians that foresight, letting them tailor care before there's even a hint of trouble.
So today, we're diving into some really groundbreaking work from the Pediatric Cardiac Genomics Consortium. This has been a massive collaborative effort, and it's seriously pushed forward our understanding of congenital heart defects, and maybe more importantly, how they affect patient outcomes. Their latest work is quite something. Okay, so let's set the scene a bit. Why is this research so crucial? We're talking about congenital heart defects, CHD. These are a huge global health issue. In the U.S. alone, over 40,000 babies are born with them each year. That's about one in every 100 births.
Mm-hmm.
And these conditions are often life-threatening, ranging from, well, relatively mild to incredibly complex, needing really intricate surgery.
That's right. And the genetics behind CHD, that's been a huge focus for researchers for a long time. We've learned quite a bit. Previous big sequencing studies showed that the genetic causes can be pretty different between syndromic cases where the heart defect is part of a bigger syndrome and sporadic ones where it's isolated. The PCGC, the consortium we mentioned, they specifically highlighted that dominant forms of CHD often link back to damaging variants in genes that modify chromatin. That's basically how DNA gets packaged. Whereas recessive forms often involve damaging variants in cilia genes. Cilia are these tiny hair-like bits involved in cell signaling.
One in 100 newborns, that statistic is just staggering. But even with all the medical progress, predicting how a specific child will do after complex surgery, that's been really, really tough, hasn't it? Especially with so many different types of CHD. What are the main hurdles? Why has it been so hard?
Well, it's complicated on multiple levels. First, just the sheer range of severity in the heart defects themselves. That's a huge variable. Then you've got these incredibly complex surgeries needed for survival, each adding its own set of risks and factors. And on top of that, there's this high degree of genetic heterogeneity, meaning lots and lots of different genes or different variations in those genes can lead to similar heart conditions. So trying to pinpoint specific genetic risk factors amidst all that noise, it's been, like finding needles in countless haystacks.
Hey, that makes sense. Mm. So faced with all that complexity, how did this research team actually manage to make progress? It sounds like they had a really clever sort of two-pronged strategy.
Yeah.
How do they start untangling things first on the clinical side and then with the genetics?
They did. It was quite innovative. First, the clinical picture. They needed to simplify how they classified the different CHD types. Instead of getting bogged down in the thousands of really specific descriptions from the filer system, which is super detailed, but maybe too detailed for this kind of large-scale analysis, like a giant map with too many tiny roads that condense them. They used a machine learning model called XGBoost to automatically group all those descriptions into just five clear, clinically relevant categories based on anatomy. So you had left ventricular outflow tract obstructions, LVO, basically blockages, heterotaxia laterality defects, HTX organs in the wrong place, atrioventricular canal defects, ABC problems in the heart center, conotruncal defects, CTD issues with the big arteries leaving the heart, and then just a category for other defects, OTH. You can kind of think of XGBoost as a smart digital map maker grouping similar areas together.
Okay, streamlining the clinical side into five manageable groups using machine learning. That makes a lot of sense. Then the genetics, which I imagine is the even bigger, more complex data set. How did they tackle that?
Yeah, that's where AI really stepped up. They used an AI tool for interpreting genomes called GMGEM. This tool was absolutely vital because it helped cut through that problem of high allelic and locus heterogeneity. We talked about, you know, many different genetic variants in many different places causing issues. GEM assigned what they called a damaging genotype score. A score of 1.0 was the highest, meaning really high confidence that a specific genetic variant is actually harmful. And for this study, they set a pretty strict threshold, only looking at variants with a score of 1.0 or higher, to be really sure about the potential impact.
Got it. High confidence genetic variants identified by AI. So now they have these clearer clinical groups and these high confidence genetic insights. How do they actually link those two complex pieces together to predict patient outcomes? That seems like the magic step.
Right, connecting the dots. For that, they used probabilistic graphical models, specifically Bayesian networks. Now, these aren't just your standard statistical models. Think of them more like incredibly sophisticated detective boards. They can map out really complex webs of cause and effect, even relationships that aren't direct or obvious. And what's really crucial, especially when you're dealing with rare outcomes where you might not have huge numbers of patients, is that these models can tell you how certain they are about their predictions. They give you uncertainty estimates. That's a huge advantage.
Wow. Okay. Bayesian networks to model all that complexity and uncertainty. That's impressive. And who are the patients in this study? Where did all this incredibly detailed data come from?
The data came from the Pediatric Cardiac Genomics Consortium itself. They had a prospective observational cohort of 2,253 CHD patients. And this isn't just any data set. It's one of the world's largest collections that integrates genetic data, detailed phenotype information, and clinical outcomes for these kids. So they had the exome sequencing, the detailed CHD classifications we talked about, and crucially, data on how these patients did after surgery.
Okay, so with this powerful approach and this amazing data set, what did they actually find? What's the big news about genomics predicting surgical outcomes? What really jumps out?
What they found is essentially a genetic risk map. Imagine knowing pretty clearly that certain genetic red flags, specifically these damaging variants in chromatin modifying genes, don't just increase the chance of having a defect like LVO, but also mean a 1.6-fold higher likelihood of bad outcomes after surgery. It's more than just an association. It's like a powerful early warning. And within that LVO group, for kids with hypoplastic left heart syndrome specifically, that enrichment for damaging chromatin variants was even higher, 1.9-fold. It confirms older ideas, but adds much more specific detail for certain subtypes.
So chromatin genes flagged risks for LVO outcomes. What about those cilia-related genes you mentioned for the recessive forms? How do they connect to outcomes?
Yeah, for patients with heterotaxy, the HTX group, they found a really striking 2.6-fold enrichment for damaging recessive or biallelic cilia-related genes. And drilling down even further, within that group, specific mutations in something called the FOXJ1 pathway showed a massive 6.9-fold enrichment. So again, it reinforces what we kind of knew, but adds critical detail about how genetics links to outcomes in specific patient groups.
And the impact wasn't subtle, right? These damaging genotypes really ramped up the risk of serious problems after surgery.
Oh, absolutely. They significantly increased the probability. For example, having one of those damaging de novo chromatin variants, meaning it's new in the child, not inherited, meant a 1.8-fold higher chance of mortality. That's huge. Also, a 1.7-fold increase in the risk of cardiac arrest and a 1.6-fold jump in needing prolonged mechanical ventilation. Similarly, those damaging recessive or biallelic cilia genotypes, they increase mortality risk by 1.4-fold, cardiac arrest by 1.5-fold, and needing that long-term ventilation by 1.4-fold. These are really substantial increases in risk.
Well, wait until you hear this part. What I found equally fascinating was that the absence of these damaging genotypes was also really informative. It actually lowered the risk. That's a key finding too, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's the other side of the coin. For instance, if a patient didn't have a damaging de novo chromatin genotype, their relative risk for mortality dropped significantly, down to 0.55. And if they didn't have a damaging recessive or biallelic cilia genotype, the mortality risk was 0.72. So knowing what genetic risks aren't present is also incredibly powerful. It can offer reassurance, maybe guide less aggressive monitoring or intervention where appropriate.
And these genetic impacts weren't uniform across the board, right? They're amplified in certain situations. Tell us about that.
Yes, context mattered a lot. Take the highest risk surgeries, the really complex ones classified as STAT 4 or STAT 5. Among patients undergoing those procedures, those who unfortunately died were 1.8 times more likely to carry a damaging chromatin variant and 1.7 times more likely to have a damaging recessive cilia genotype. And looking at specific defect types among LVO patients, having that damaging de novo chromatin variant boosted the mortality likelihood 2.3-fold. Or for HDX patients who had a cardiac arrest, having a damaging recessive cilia genotype made that event 3.3 times more likely. It gives this really granular risk insight.
What about kids who had other issues besides the heart defect? things like extracardiac anomalies or ECAs. How did genetics factor in there?
Right. ECAs themselves, as you might expect, had a big impact. They increased the probability of mortality 2.8-fold on their own and prolonged ventilation 1.7-fold. But the study found a crucial interaction with genetics. Damaging de novo chromatin genotypes made it 2.5 times more likely for a patient to have both an ECA and unfortunately die after surgery, and 2.4 times more likely to have both an ECA and need prolonged ventilation. It really shows this kind of synergistic risk when you have both factors present.
A double whammy, essentially. And what about the cilia genotypes in patients with ECAs?
Similar story there. A damaging recessive or biallelic cilia genotype increased mortality risk 1.5-fold in patients who also had an ECA. But here's a really striking one. For HTX patients, the ones with laterality defects who also had an ECA, having a damaging cilia genotype increased their probability of needing prolonged ventilation by a huge 4.0-fold. It really underscores how combining genetic information with other clinical factors gives you a much sharper picture of the overall risk.
It's just incredible the level of detail they can pull out now. It really does feel like giving doctors a kind of genetic crystal ball.
Yeah.
So, stepping back, what's the big picture here? What does this all mean for patient care going forward? It feels like this really cements the role of genome sequencing in the clinic.
I think it does. This study, being the largest yet to really connect specific genotypes to actual surgical outcomes in CHD, it provides pretty definitive evidence. It shows that genomic data is truly crucial for predicting severe post-op problems, especially when you're looking at higher-risk surgeries, specific types of CHD, or patients who also have extracardiac anomalies. We're moving beyond just diagnosing the defect itself to actually forecasting that individual patient's likely journey through recovery.
And the practical application, how does this change what doctors can actually do for these kids? It's more than just knowing the risk, right?
Absolutely. The power lies in being able to act on that knowledge. Quantifying the risk means doctors can potentially use specific therapies earlier, maybe even before the surgery, to try and head off those predicted complications. So, for example, if pre-op sequencing flags a damaging cilia genotype in a patient, particularly one with heterotaxy, the clinical team immediately knows, okay, this child is at much higher risk for breathing problems after surgery. That knowledge could trigger immediate, more aggressive airway clearance, maybe using specific mucolytic drugs, adjusting ventilation strategies, even avoiding certain anesthetics that are known to mess with ciliary function. It allows that shift from just reacting to problems to proactively trying to prevent them based on the child's own genetics.
So it's genuinely moving towards prevention and truly personalized care, planned even before the operation starts. That feels like a massive step.
It really is, and think about it. As the cost of whole genome sequencing keeps falling and the turnaround times get faster, this kind of detailed genomic information will become routinely available before surgery. That enables true precision risk stratification. It allows for interventions tailored to the individual child that could just dramatically improve their outcomes. This kind of research is paving the way for whole genome sequencing to become a standard part of care for critically ill newborns, offering this unprecedented predictive insight.
It sounds incredibly promising, but, you know, every major study has its limitations or things to consider. What did the authors acknowledge in terms of limitations for this work?
That's always important to consider, yeah. They were upfront about a few things. First, the PCGC cohort, while huge, wasn't technically an inception cohort. That means it might slightly underrepresent very early deaths that happened before enrollment, so their complication rates might be conservative, kind of lower bounds. They also noted they didn't have enough statistical power to really dig into the genomic impact on less severe types of CHD. The focus was understandably on the higher risk cases. And, you know, while these large clinical registries are amazing resources, there can always be some variability in data quality, even with careful checks. Finally, actually replicating this exact study elsewhere is tough right now, simply because the PCGC dataset is so uniquely deep and comprehensive. However, they do point out that their Bayesian modeling approach is actually pretty robust even when data is limited. And crucially, their main findings align really well with what's already known from biology and clinical experience. That adds a lot of confidence.
Okay, so this deep dive really shows us that bringing together genome sequencing and AI gives us this incredible new power to forecast outcomes after these major heart surgeries for kids. It feels like we're truly moving into an era where personalized genetic insights can actively shape clinical decisions and treatments.
Absolutely. Connecting it all back, knowing a patient's specific genetic risks allows for that proactive, tailored care. It could make a huge difference in their post-operative journey, whether that's by identifying those heightened risks so the team can prepare, or maybe confirming a lower risk profile, which can be immensely reassuring for families and might guide less intensive follow-up.
Looking forward then, what do you see as the single biggest way this could transform precision medicine and pediatric cardiac care? How could this really change lives?
For me, the most transformative aspect is that potential shift from a reactive wait-and-see approach to a proactive know-and-prepare strategy for every single child facing these surgeries. It means optimizing everything from how they prepare for surgery to how closely they're watched afterwards, potentially stopping complications before they even start, or at least lessening their impact. This level of personalized care, truly based on a child's unique genetic makeup, it really has the potential to redefine outcomes for these vulnerable kids and lead to many more healthy futures.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoy this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.